You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
It's lampshade time. Get on in here, folks. That's right. The wait is over. It is time once again for the 59th installment, believe it or not, number 59 of the Church of the Lampshade show. As always, glad you could make the time to join us. It's always good to get together with the congregation. It's just Tuesday is the new Sabbath. as deemed by the Reverend Lampshade, Tuesday is new Sabbath. So you'd be like, if you ever get to go back to work, after the corona hysteria, you just tell your boss you have to be off on Tuesdays, and they'll be like, well, why do I have to be off on Tuesdays? That's my Sabbath day. It's a part of my religion. Tuesday's my Sabbath, because that's when we gather together. My church gets together on Tuesdays. My congregation. Glad the congregation is together. Glad you could join us this week. As always, the intention is to have a fun, informative show. I have no idea how it'll go. As always, I'm flying by the seat of my pants. I don't even know what we're all going to be talking about. Maybe a rough little outline here, but thankfully we have notes from listeners, so that helps prime the pump, as it were, because I need all the help I can get, you know, just figuring out what we're going to talk about. We get away because we were talking on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. If you don't catch that, it's always a fun and easy about 30-minute show where I sit down with Sven Longshanks and we try to find something light to end the week with. And we were talking about, is it getting hard to find anything even fun to talk about because everything is Corona-chan. It's the Corona pandemic, which we'll get into a little bit. I'm going to try not to spend too much time on it because, again, everybody's talking about, if you're like me, I've got Corona fatigue. I am about all Corona'd out. The only good thing from the Corona thing is I am collecting Corona-chans, just like back in the day, collecting dank Pepes. So that's the only good thing to come out of this Corona business. Just quick note, yeah, got the postcard from Matt. Love it. Caused that feel. Good to hear from you. Yeah, we're all hanging in here. We always like to start the show off recognizing financial support for the show because, believe me, it makes a difference. We survive here in the lampshade world in no small part thanks to listener support. We have 6 supporters this week, including one Bitcoin Anon. Appreciate it, Bitcoin Anon. And as always, we like to go through the listener support mailbag. I always think, what if like 3,000 people sent me support in a month? You know, it's like the entire show would go through, would be going through recognizing listener support. But yeah, it'd be a great problem to have. But you know, as long as we can, we like to go through the mailbag. This is one of my fun things to go through. So let's get right to that, and then we'll get into the regular part of the discussion. It's basically the regular part of the discussion because listeners always bring great topics to the table. First up from Bill. Grandpa, wanted to send you an article by a person who uses the pen name Paul Jones. It deals with the topic of how being a believing Christian allows one to better handle psychologically the weight of being red-pilled, about how much of a strange matrix we're living in due to all the lies and deceptions of the establishment. I wonder what your thoughts are on this. Hope you and the family are hanging in there during these crisis times, Bill. And yeah. I have to say the article's spot on. I'm always like, when people send me articles from time to time, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes some of this stuff looks like a dictionary printout. And I'm like, don't really have time to go through this, but I do it for you, the listeners. But this one wasn't too long. And actually, I start skimming through it and then I'm like, So then I have to slow down and actually give it a more in-depth read, and it is, it's very spot on. And in the article, I'm not gonna sit here and read it to the audience because people don't want to sit here and listen to me read, but it deals with the different layers and basically getting to the different layers of the truth. And you know, it's And it is. It's spot on, because the final layer is realizing that we are in a spiritual battle. And it's funny when you get into this and as you follow the truth, because if you follow the truth long enough, you will come to Christ. I really believe that. It's one of the things I always say. I don't preach to people. I am not trying to, you know, convert anybody. And that's true in the sense that I'm not sitting here trying to convince you to believe, or, you know, convince you if you're a non-believer to believe in Jesus. But I guess I was just dawned on me that I guess I am evangelizing to the extent that if you seek the truth on your own long enough, I believe you will come to Christ. That's the inevitable end to that road. If you seek truth long enough, you will come to the truth, the way, the truth, and the life. But it's funny, because as you go along this path and you see people going through the different layers of you know, the truth, as is in the article that I read, you get to these different layers of the truth, and you get to these different you see people that are at a different level of understanding. And you remember when you were just back at that level. You know, a lot of people get frustrated with people like that. I just find it kind of, I don't know, nostalgic. You know, nostalgic when you see people that, you know, they're back there at like level two, and they think they're at the pinnacle of of being awakened to what's really going on in society. I run into that at social media wasteland known as Gab quite a bit. You know, you'll run into these people who jump into your feed, and they're at like level two, which would be like, maybe level three, between level two and level three, which would be like Alex Jones tier stuff. You know, this is the government. Is it really running? It's actually, yes. The secret, yes. Nazi Illuminati Saudis that run Hollywood that are, and you're just like, okay, I was never at that level. I skipped that level. You know, it's like being my age and being proud that there are no pictures of you with a mullet from back in the day. There are no, it's the secret lizard people, Illuminati Nazis that run Hollywood level for me. I'm proud of that fact. It is funny though, because you run into people that are back there at that tier. And you know, they drop this and they think they're dropping something on you that is just going to, you know, just blow you away, you know, and you're just like, dude, you're way back there. You got a long way to go. I mean, it's nice that you kind of started, but don't stop there. For goodness sakes, don't stop there. It's like if somebody starts working through the different levels of the truth. You know, the early levels are actually some of the easier ones to get through. You know, I mean, you get those first two or three aren't actually that difficult to get to. It ain't that hard to get to Alex Jones tier. Will I grasp that there's more going on than just simply, you know, politicians, we need to vote for the right people. There's obviously other forces at work here. But as you go through the layers, it does get more difficult. And I always say that the ultimate layer, and it is just alluded to in the article, is the realization, the final unveiling is the realization that this is a spiritual battle. You people get all the way down, they get to the end, you know, to the last of the levels of truth, to realize that everything in our society is basically founded on lies or half truths. And one of the big ones is the 6 million in the gas chambers lie. And so many people sadly stop there, and they think there isn't another layer. You know, there isn't another, and they stop there and they just hang right there at the Jews. But there is that other ultimate layer when you realize that this ultimately is a spiritual battle. And once you see it, you see it. You know, it's not just like wishful thinking or seeing what you want to see. When you look at the level of coordination of the different things that are happening and different things, different wheels turning and everything, you realize that it goes beyond what like the Jews can do. You know, there is a greater coordinating effort behind the scenes. There's so much being coordinated and so many things happening that it goes beyond that. And when that is the ultimate, you know, and once you realize that, once you start grasping that, you realize, you know, this, what a serious, you know, I don't know how far-reaching fight this is. It's one of the reasons I think what we're doing with this show right now is more important than anything we've ever done before. I really do. I believe because with, you know, especially our Christian-specific message that we do later in the show, you know, it's like we're taking the battle to the enemy. We're taking the battle. We're getting behind the front lines, and we are getting to the core of the enemy strategy. We are getting to the core of what this fight's about. It doesn't mean that the other skirmishes and the other battles don't matter. I'm not saying that. But it all has to work together as a whole. This is like if you were a nation at war. You can't win the war with just air power or just a fancy, you know, high-tech navy or just really good ground forces. You have to have all of those different facets. You have to have all those different facets of military power, and you have to know where to, where to use them and how to use them and how to work out a strategy. And this is essentially a big part of that. I think a very important part of that. So, yeah, very good stuff. Let's keep on rocking. Get to hear from Jackie this week. Maybe I'm just feeling the fatigue, the current manufactured crisis, the corona crisis. I don't know. Hope all is well with you and yours, and that the lampshade household never runs out of toilet paper. As it was in the day of Noah, so shall it be in the days of Corona-chan. All the best, Jackie. And yeah, it's the toilet paper thing still just blows me away because I've talked to various people. I'm a truth seeker, and I keep thinking there has to be something behind it. There has to be some form of reasoning behind it, and I have yet to find anybody that's been able to give me a reasoning behind it. It just shows how, I don't know, how maybe people aren't even able to grasp. You know, they get in a panic and they get it in their head. I've got to have something to wipe my ass with. That's not the first thing that goes through my mind. I know the first things that go through my mind is I have to have something to eat and I have to have somewhere to live. You know, something to wipe my ass with. I find something to wipe my ass with. Those curtains got to go. You know, find something to wipe my ass with. I don't have to have curtains. If I'm in a pinch, I'll be shredding curtains and wiping my ass in luxury. I don't know. You know, it's like a psychosis that just happens to people. They just freak out. They don't know what to do. It's funny because where I live, in the county I live, they've had exactly one corona case turn up. And so they've ordered, like, the county is on this whole, you're supposed to stay in your home. And it's funny because, you know, like the first day they issue this and all this hysteria is going on, and you go out here and the highway's like empty, like there's nobody out. It's like, this is cool. I'm rolling down. They see me rolling. Yeah, I'm rolling. And I'm like, man, I got the whole road to myself. This is cool. And like 2 days later, it's like traffic is almost back to normal because everybody's like, yeah, this is stupid. I think people, the hysteria maybe is starting to wind down. We can hope as a rock on to the next one. This is from the Birdman. Grandpa Lampshade, I believe this corona thing is something to do with USA-China trade war. I don't see people sick in my community walking around sick. Maybe it's a hoax, this virus. Maybe USA wants to get rid of the elderly to save on Social Security payments. Maybe to bring down the stock market only for the super rich to buy on the downside but overblown, this virus. Your thoughts, Birdman? P.S. Don't ever give up on Aryan Nation. Well, that's kind of what I'm leaning towards is the numbers. If you get away from the hysteria, the numbers just aren't there. I mean, it's not. I was perplexed by the Italian numbers that they're so high, because obviously this virus is more severe to, like, Chinese people and Iranians, which is a strange coincidence. But the Italian angle kind of threw me off. Obviously, for old people, it's serious. If you're elderly or you have underlying health problems, you should take this serious. It's weird how in our society we have to have this one size fits all. Everything has to be, like, lumped together, like it has to apply to everybody. They can't just say, well, if you're elderly and you have underlying health problems, you should take this serious. You know, and we talk about this, you know, is
obviously it's an overhyped hoax, I believe. It's real, but it's not like the whole "we're all gonna die" that the media keeps telling us. But if you have underlying health problems, especially respiratory problems, or your immune system is compromised for any number of reasons, you know, or you're old, you should take this serious. I mean, it is serious for you. If you don't have it, if none of those apply to you, then, you know, you probably should be able to, I think you should be able to go to work and get on with your life. I don't think they should be shutting the entire country down over it. But it's like we have to have this, you know, blank one size fits all. I guess maybe this is the evolution of the equality narrative. You know, we have to have this blank everything one size fits all because we're all exactly equal and we're all exactly the same. You know, it's like breast cancer. You never hear about breast cancer in men, but it can strike men. It technically, men do get breast cancer. It's just, you know, very small. It's, you know, primarily a female disease, but they don't go around, you know, obviously going on about breast cancer applies to everybody. It's always about the pink. Yeah, the pink ribbon, because it's all about women, because they acknowledge that if you're a woman, you're the one that needs to be really concerned about breast cancer, because it happens so, you know, infrequently for men. And yet with something like this corona thing, they can't just say, well, if you're elderly or Chinese, of Chinese descent or Iranian descent, you know, you might want to watch this thing. But otherwise, you know, yeah, you're probably good to go. But anyway, yeah, I'm not sure what the end game is. I don't think that it's just simply something as simplistic as we're going to try to keep Trump from getting reelected. I'm sure that probably maybe plays into it. I don't know. But right now, my current theory on it, and I said I wasn't going to hung up on Corona Trump, but like, just like you, the listeners, this is what's in the news 24/7. It's like you can't escape from Corona Trump. You can't escape from her grasp. And my current theory on it is it, again, the debt-based system that we live under has to be reset. It has to be, there has to be a crash. And traditionally, it's been a big war, and it may still be where it winds up. But right now, we get this as the excuse. You know, we cry, you know, have the big reset in the debt-based economy, and, you know, which means a depression, basically. And we blame it on the coronavirus. It's not the banksters' faults. It's the virus. So don't get mad. Don't figure out that the whole system is rigged. You know, just keep on buying into it. It's just because we had this freak virus. They show the numbers. You know, it's like over 1,000 people have now died of coronavirus in the U.S. out of like 300 million. You know, I'm sorry, but that's not, you know, I don't remember what the population of the country is. Maybe it's not 300 million, maybe it's 30 million. I don't feel like looking it up. Out of all these millions and millions of people in the country, you know, 1,000 people have died. You know, statistically, this is nothing. But anyway, it's getting back to the point that the Italian thing perplexed me. And then I heard the other day that like the average age of these people dying in Italy is like 76. So the elderly element still plays in. I mean, again, if you're elderly, you should take this serious. I'm not saying you sit here and blow it off if you're elderly, because, you know, yeah, it is serious for you. But that's why the Italian numbers are so high. I didn't realize that there were that many old people in Italy. Rocking on in Florida coming through with the support. I thought I had a note with this one, and I've dug all around here and I don't see it. So Fort Myers, got it. Appreciate it. If there was a note in there, I've said it somewhere and I can't find it. I stopped recording and looked all over because I thought I had a note in that one, but sorry about that if there was and I misplaced it. Finally, one of our weekly regular supporters, Mr. T, GPL. Hope the small ties helps. God bless you. It all helps, believe me. I'm like the waitress who gets by. If everybody leaves $5 tip on the table, you know, she can make a decent living. So anything helps, believe me. I don't expect you to clear out your bank account to support the Lampshade Show, but big or small, all support is very much appreciated. So once again, thank you to listener supporters. Thank you for the great topics. Always makes it easier for me. So, yeah, big or small, Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Very much appreciated. That information can be found at the bottom of the page. We've got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you've got some other kind of weirdo cryptocurrency, we probably have a wallet for that. So drop me an email. I'll get you. I'll try my best to get you a wallet address for that. Hard to beat the snail mail, though. It's like going old school. So once again, it is appreciated. And those of you who do choose to support the show is very much appreciated. And again, I just consider it. You'll feel good supporting the Lampshade Show. So yeah, let's get off into the rest of the show. Again, we'll have our Christian specific message here in just a bit. I think it'll be a fun topic and hopefully something enlightening for all of you. I think it will be. Yeah, and these times, yeah, like I say, Corona is all we hear about. That's all that's in the news. And I was sitting here thinking that, of course, all over the country, we've got all these various, lockdown orders, and people are going to get tired of that real quick. But as everybody's sitting around, in their house now, I mean, you can only do what, gaming and watching TV for so long. And I'm thinking that this is going to force people to actually use their brains a little bit. Maybe. I don't know. Is that possible? I mean, really, how much Netflix, porn and video games can you do before you're forced to just try to start thinking about something? But this is probably where the suicide rate comes from. They're talking about suicides ticking up from all this being locked down, and I wouldn't be surprised. People just don't know how to sit around and think and reflect. All they know to do is to be constantly entertained. That's something I don't get either, and I've never gotten. I mean, just for years, I know so many people, probably the vast majority of people I know, it's like they have to have some kind of background noise all the time. If it's quiet, they turn the TV on. Even if you ever get on those, you go to somebody's house or somebody and you go in there and they got the TV on and they're not even watching it. They're in the next room. It's why you got the TV on? You're not even watching it. And people are well, I like the noise. Same thing. You go in somewhere and people have the radio on, and their job. You go to somebody's job and they got the radio on. It's like, so, I guess, do you like this station? Oh, I don't know. I just like the background noise. I just have to have noise. I don't like it quiet. I don't know how many times I've had people tell me that I don't like it quiet. I got to have some kind of noise. And I never understood that. And apparently a lot of people are like that. They got to have some kind of noise. They've got to have some sort of distraction. We live in a society where people feel like they have to be constantly distracted. They have to, we talk about how people are distracted, with politics and with truth and stuff, but people crave that distraction. They don't know how to function. Maybe it's because we've lived our whole lives as a people now, constantly being distracted. People crave the distraction. I got to be distracted. I got to have some noise. I got to have some background noise. I got to have something on. I got to have the TV going. I got to have some kind of noise, some kind of, can't sit in the silence. I love the silence. I love sitting around. My favorite times of the day is when you're young. You love it when it's Saturday night. You're going out with your friends and you're doing stuff, usually stuff you shouldn't be doing. and now that I'm getting older, my favorite time is the opposite. Getting up early in the morning, usually before the sun is up, and it's quiet. You sit there, and this is that nice time of the year when it hadn't gotten hot yet and it's not cold, and you can open a window and there's a breeze coming through, so you can hear nature outside, and you have that cup of coffee, and it's quiet, and you can start gathering your thoughts and sorting things out in your mind. And that's a lot of times when the Christian specific messages for the week come to me, is when I'm sitting there, because you can come closer to hearing the Lord when it's quiet. No, I don't mean a voice spoke from heaven. I just mean understanding things better here. I guess I'm kind of figuratively speaking in a way of understanding the world around you a little better, and even the spiritual aspects of it. But you can't do that if you're constantly distracted. It's no surprise that, we are constantly, there's white noise all the time. I was thinking that with the internet, it's unprecedented in history that the average person has full access to all of this vast, vast, vast amounts of information. And what are people doing? You have all this access to vast amounts of information. You know, it's like when you try to explain that, you know, mathematically, you know, there was no way that 6 million, you know, were vaporized in ovens fired by wood. I mean, it's just not mathematically possible. And you can show people that and they're like, oh, prove it. Prove it, actually. It's like, no, you have the internet. You're having this conversation on the internet. Look it up yourself. How lazy can you be? People have access to more information than ever before, ever thought, ever dreamed about in history. You read about the great thinkers throughout history. Imagine if they would have had access to what they could have come up with if they would have had access to the vast amounts of information that people have access to today. And how do they utilize it? Porn. You know, constant posts on Facebook about nothing. About nothing. They drivel on about nothing. Everybody chatters along about nothing. There's this constant flood of white noise. You know, when the internet first really blew up, And it obviously grew and was getting big, and people under, you know, wow, this is something amazing. And a lot of people, we wondered, well, how are they going to control this? Having this much information out there available to the public is very dangerous to the current order, to those who benefit from the current order. How are they going to manage this? A lot of people say, well, they're going to shut it down. They're going to shut down. They're going to control. They're going to edit. And you see a certain amount of that. I mean, obviously, I've been shut down from a lot of sites. And you know, yeah, you've been banned and things like that. But by and large, the overwhelming tactic they use is to just flood you with white noise. Now, yeah, you have access to all of this information, but you have to dig through like it's like diving for a pearl. You have to swim all the way to the bottom to find the information because we're just flooded with white noise, with constant distraction. This corona thing is like a big distraction. Everybody's whipped into hysteria, and they welcome the hysteria. You know, I mean, at least for now. People have a short attention span, so I think their ability to keep everybody interested in this and whipped up. But you notice that, you know, I mean, you notice it's like, oh, people that want to believe that they're all going to die from this, but you can feel this element of they're excited about it. You know, you can. That's why they buy into it. They're excited about it because it's like this sense of danger. It's like this sense of something is breaking up the routine. We could have this horrible thing. We're all going to die, even though the numbers say, no, we're not all going to die. But there's like this certain element. It's like people that go out and chase tornadoes. You know, I never understood that. You know, people go out there and purposely go drive towards the tornado, you know, but there's this huge danger. And of course, with a tornado, it's a very real danger, but they're chasing this thing down and they're excited. And you hear them, they're recording, and they always like try to say like, well, we're doing this because, you know, to warn people and for scientific purposes. They're like excited. There's like this, you know, this rush. You know, they got this rush from doing it because it's exciting, because they feel closer to danger. They feel alive. Our people feel dead inside because they live in this constant age of distraction. There's white noise. I got to have a noise going. Yeah, people, everybody's locked in their houses. Well, everybody. But you do. You have all these people, you know, in lockdown, in self-quarantine, or social distancing by staying at home. And they don't know how to be like alone with their thoughts, to sit here and sort their mind out. They've abandoned spirituality, so they don't have that. They're not going to be sitting around a home alone in prayer or reading some scripture, trying to broaden their horizons. They're going to dive in even deeper into the distractions, because now you can't even go outside. You can't go to the store. You can't go do anything for a distraction. So you're stuck at the home distractions. And again, what do you got? Netflix, porn, TV. You have to wonder, is this like going to psychologically break a lot of people? I don't know. I think it will. I think when it's all said and done, they're going to see that there was a huge uptick in suicides because of all of this. And probably more than the number of people that gonna die from Corona-chan. It's horrible. You think about it. Have you ever turned on daytime TV? You know, I mean, if you're stuck at home, you know, you're working from home or something, go in there and don't do it for long. It'll poison your mind. But turn on daytime TV and see the crap that people watch. This is what is on, and this is what people are sitting around. Of course, it's going to drive the suicide rate up. What do you mean he's not the baby daddy, Mari? Not the baby daddy. What do you mean he's not the baby daddy? It's over. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to off myself. And everybody be social distancing. People someday done to kill themselves in their house, and ain't nobody know they're dead in there. But going to go check on them because we're socially distancing ourselves. We live in a society of constant social distancing. This is just taken to the extreme. I don't know. Yeah, and you get anything. I've always been of a mind of moderation. Things tend to become a problem when taken to the excess. You know, sometimes a little bit of something is fine, but you can't let that get a hold of you. You know, I mean, for instance, I don't have the mindset that, you know, you can't play any video games because I just rot your mind. I don't think there's anything wrong with playing video games, but it just, you know, you can't do that all the time. You know, I mean, you know, you do it for an hour or so and then go do something else, you know, watch TV or something. You know, I don't think that in and of itself, I think watching American TV is shit because virtually all of it is messaging. But I mean, you know, if you watch old movies or stuff from overseas that isn't constant messaging, you know, if you want to watch that for an hour or so, you know, just for a little distraction to let your mind rest with some mindless distraction, I don't think there's a problem with that. I do think sitting around and watching daytime TV for 10 hours a day will like probably drive you to want to off yourself. So don't do that. But things taken to the extreme usually is when things become a problem. Somebody that has, you know, a drink once a month or something, you don't say they have a drinking problem, but somebody that gets shit-faced five times a week, they obviously have a drinking problem. Yeah, it's the excess that usually winds up being the problem. And in our society, we have an excess of constant distraction. It's just, it's all around you. And if you're used to isolating yourself from these things and quieting your mind, you will become more aware of how much everybody else is distracted. You have conversations with people, IRL, and you try to talk about things, you know, that matter. And not even like getting into something deep, you know, just something that like you're thinking to yourself, because if you're like me, you talk to somebody IRL, you try to gauge about where they're at, because you don't want to go like full on... full on like red pigs, they're just going to shut down. So you try to figure out where they're at so that you can like come in, you know, meet them where they're at, you know, and maybe you can inch them a little further along to figuring out how things work and why they work the way they are. They're not ready for like the full dose of here's the truth, you know, because their brains explode and like blood runs out of their eyes. And they're like, no, it can't be true. And they don't, you can't ever get there with them. But if you can figure out where they're at, and you never know, like you talk to people IRL and you're trying to figure out where they're at so you can kind of meet them there and you know, and then try to like, you know, move things along a little bit, you know, another few steps, at least in the moment that you have to talk to them. But you run into people that are like just so tuned into the constant distraction, you know, and you're trying to figure out where they're at and you're trying to talk about something that matters in society, in life in general. And all they can talk to you about is like movies, you know, or something on Facebook or something that doesn't matter. It's just drivel. And as the longer you talk to these people, and the more you realize that they don't know anything except the distraction. All they understand is the white noise. They're incapable of discussing anything of more meaning than the white noise, than the distraction itself. That's all they know is the distraction. They don't know anything deeper. It's like when you try to talk. Have you ever tried to talk to somebody, you know, about history? And you try to talk to somebody about history. If you're like me and you talk to people, you know, and not do. I like talking to people. I don't know. It's a contradiction of myself. In a way, I feel like a hermit, you know, like I just really sometimes feel like I just prefer to not be around people. But the contradiction comes in that I actually really enjoy visiting with people and figuring out where they're at and where they're coming from and whatnot. But have you ever visited, like you try to talk to somebody, for instance, about history, and you're trying to talk about historical events and you know, what that meant and what, how that was a turning point. Yeah, just, yeah, not even anything like, you know, out there fringe, you know, just some kind of mainstream history, trying to talk about history. And yet everything they begin, you know, everything point they make begins with, have you ever seen the movie? Yeah, you run into that. I guarantee you've probably run into it. I can see you out there right now. The listener's sitting there nodding your head because you know what I'm talking about. You're trying to talk about, and everything they begin, every point they begin to make is, would, have you ever seen the movie? And then fill in the blank after that. I can't imagine having your historical knowledge founded on a movie produced by Hollywood. Produced by Hollywood. It's got to be true. They wouldn't tell us that if it wasn't true. But it's amazing that all they know is the distraction. All those things, all these movies, you know, they're entertainment. Of course, like I say, virtually everything in the West now has some sort of messaging and some sort of programming in it. But on the surface, it's supposed to be entertaining. You have people basing their entire historical view on Schindler's List or some other movie that they saw. They have no grasp. They don't read anymore. You don't even have to read a book. You know, again, you have all of this information, the tip of your fingers on your computer, access to all this information. And all people access is the distraction, is the white noise. A distracted people are an easily led people, or an easily manipulated people. It's like cows. You know, it's like cows. You talk about, if I talk to you about, you know, gathering cows, you say, we're going to gather cows up. And you probably would get this view of like the old West, you know, people are going to be out there on horses and they're chasing cows around and the cows are trying to get away and the cowboys are out there roping them and dragging them back into the herd and finally driving them into the pens. And that's not how it works anymore. People go out there and honk the horn and shake a bag of cattle cubes and the cows just follow them into the pen. They're distracted. They because every time they fed them, they honk the horn and they put the cubes out. So the cows are trained to that. They're distracted. They don't look that they're going into the pen. All they're doing is following the sound of the honking horn. It means I'm going to get something. I'm going to get food. I'm going to get a distraction. And they just follow right into the pen. You don't have to chase them around anymore, waving a rope around in there. That's the hard way. Nobody does that hardly anymore. Everybody just honks the horn and the cows just follow them right in. A distracted public is an easily led public. All you have to do is put the messaging out there. Again, look at the numbers. They're right in front of everybody. They're telling you the numbers. 1,000 people have died of corona. They don't tell you out of, you know, millions and millions of people in the country. They don't tell you that. They don't tell you, well, you know, in the context of how many people have died from the regular flu, it's a drop in the bucket. Don't tell you any of that. They just have to sound serious because people are used to reacting to that. Oh, the person that I perceive to be an authority is on the TV, which I believe is telling me the truth, and they're saying that this is a huge deal. I'm going to die. And it must be, they just follow right along. I laughed at someone the other day. They were posting something up on the social media wasteland known as Gab, you know, about, hey, mark my words, this is all going to be used to take our guns. Americans and the gun fetish. They act like their firearms are this magical thing. Just possessing them gives you the power. And they fear your power because it could awaken. Yes, I'm actually waving my arms around in some sort of, I don't know, pointless manner here. And I always love pointing out that these people, they've essentially told everybody to go lock themselves in their house and arrest themselves. And everybody is doing it. So why in the hell would they go to the trouble of trying to take your guns? I mean, there would be absolutely no upside to it for them. You know, what would be the upside of taking your guns? There is none. They tell you all they have to do is have somebody go on the box that you perceive to be an authority, and you tune in and turn it to that channel and watch this person that you perceive to be an authority, whether it's a politician or a expert or a professional or a newscaster, and they put on their serious voice and tell you, lock yourselves in your homes and don't come out until we tell you to, until you tell you it's safe. Because if you come out, you're going to die. And you may cause everyone around you to die. And everybody goes and locks himself. You're arrested in your house. Voluntarily. They're going to use this to take my guns. Why? Why would they need to? They don't need to. They don't care. Nobody cares about your stupid guns. It's a magical thing. Look at my gun cabinet. Don't get me wrong. I don't got anything against guns. But this fetish. This like sick fetish about it. Like, it just the fact that it's there, that you can look over in your gun cabinet and they're there, it means you've got a super secret power. It's silly. Again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with, you know, I'm not anti-firearm or anything, but that fetish, it's weird. It's just really strange. I don't get that. I don't get that at all. But no, all they have to do is put it on the box because a distracted public would just do what they're told. They don't know any other way because they don't sit around and think. They don't sit around and think about things. They don't sit around and think, well, what does this mean? Well, what could be the ulterior motive? What could be going on with it? I think about things, and even when I think I've come to pretty much a conclusion on them, I still listen to other people and I read what other people think about it, and I think of other ideas, because it's possible that the one thing you think about this thing isn't the only aspect of it. There's several different things in play, like with this corona thing. I think there's several different things in play with it. You know, we always have limited information. We don't know. But there's, you know, if you just come to the conclusion, well, it's because of this. And yeah, that might be true. But once you just stop at that and don't keep trying to look and consider other possibilities, you could miss out on, you know, other things that are happening. There's more than one point to a big thing happening most of the time. And of course, in this age of distraction, if you are a thinker, if you are a truth seeker, you constantly run into those who intentionally try to distract you. They see you having a conversation about truths and they try to distract you. We call them shills. And you see these shills out there, and they will usually jump into your feed with their shilling. You know, that it's like there's no reason they would jump in with that except, you know, they're not bringing a counterpoint. They're not bringing another. They're bringing essentially what is the approved narrative, and they act like it's something edgy. You know what I'm talking about? Like, we'll stick with corona because that is the topic of the day always. You know, I'm sick of it. But, you know, if corona is, you know, and it's an if, we don't know, but if corona is some sort of, like, say, bioweapon, you know, the simplest, most obvious answer is it was released by the U.S. on the Chinese. And, you know, okay, you don't want to buy that. Some people want to believe it's a U.S. bioweapon that the Chinese stole and they were studying it in a lab and it got away from them. You know, okay, well, maybe, you know. But the most stupid one, which is more or less the approved conspiracy theory in this age of distraction, is it's a bioweapon that the Chinese released on the U.S., I had somebody jump into my feed with that. Oh, yeah, it's a bioweapon released by the Chinese to bring down our president and to bring down our economy. So they released it on their own people to eventually work its way to America. I mean, it's like we don't have any Chinese here. Do you think there's no Chinese agents in America? They could just, if they were going to do that, they could just release it here. No, they released it on their, and their answer is, well, that's just because them commies, they don't care anything about their people. Of course they released it on their own people. That way we wouldn't notice. Yeah, you don't get it, do you? It's a distraction. It's shilling. You get used to seeing it. You know, you get used to be on social media long enough, you can spot the shills from a mile away. Now, there's some people that are just, like I say, that we talked about earlier, they're back here at the Alex Jones tier. That's just as far along as they are. But when you have somebody pipe in and they push this narrative that is essentially a part of the approved narrative, you know, this point of view that is basically, you know, like, for instance, the notion that it's a bioweapon at all is denied by the official narrative. But underneath that, the approved conspiracy theory, which you're not going to get shut down over, is that it's a bioweapon that was released by evil Chinese to get to America. You know, they'll tell you that's a conspiracy theory, but it's an approved conspiracy theory. You're not going to get booted off of social media probably for that, unless there's something else. But you know, that's the approved, because that's the straw man conspiracy theory that they're willing to allow out there so that they can dismiss it as being stupid. And look, here we can prove that it's not that. Well, yeah, because nobody who's really thought this through really believes that. I'm going to get a note email from somebody going, "I believe it, Grandpa. And this is why you're wrong." But, and I'm not a shill. But you see, they jump in and they push that. And they never have the shillery, the part picking them out as shill as intentional distraction is usually if you press them a little bit on it, they don't have anything to come back with. The chinks released this is on their own people to work its way to America to get after America. Well, it's worked its way through the whole planet now. I'm not really sure that would have been the easiest way to go, because like I say, there's plenty of Chinese in America, and I'm sure out of those, there are some who are like agents of the Chinese government. You know, it would have been a more straightforward thing to just release it here. Seems like a roundabout way to go. It's right up there with putting people on trains and shipping them across the country in the middle of a war when you have a fuel crisis, just to put them in camps so you can gas them. I mean, doesn't really make sense. It's the kind of a roundabout way to go. It's a roundabout way to accomplish something. You know, if you wanted to release a bioweapon on the U.S., wouldn't you just do it in the U.S.? And they can't ever go beyond. They'll just sit there and regurgitate essentially what is the approved messaging, the approved counter message that this is what you're allowed. And they're calling, you know, and so you run into people that they are an intentional distraction. And they're not trying to work through the truth. They're not like, wow, I hadn't thought of that. What do you think of this? Because I kind of heard this idea and I think it might be true. You know, people like that, you know, they're just trying to get to the truth too. They may not be at the same conclusion that you are. And they may have some different point of view that it doesn't hurt to consider. But when they can't come up with anything, they just try to beat you over the head with the same thing over and over again. There's constant distraction. There's intentional, I should say, what I meant to say. They are ones that are out there intentionally trying to distract you. So you have all of this distraction as you try to wade through this, and you wonder why you can't reach the people. People don't know how to think. All they know, all they understand is distraction. And you're trying to cut through all of that. You're trying to get people to understand what's really going on, understand the truth, understand the motivations, and understand these different aspects. And all they understand is distraction. It's a society we live in. And I guess the end of that's just the observation, because again, there's nothing you can do about it, but understand it. You know, because if you understand these things, it helps keep from being frustrated, you know, put out with people. It's just the way it is. It's just the way this society is. People get neurotic. People get anxious if they don't have a distraction. That's all they know. That's all they've had their whole life is constant distraction. So just being aware of it, you should be able to then, you know, at least not get discouraged when, you know, that's a lot to cut through. You know, you're trying to inform people, trying to get people to understand that there's, you know, a lot going on in this world, and they don't want to grasp, but you have to understand what you're dealing with, and don't get angry, don't get frustrated, just that's what it is, and that's the reality. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that. No, we're going to run way long here, so we're going to get into the Christian-specific segment of the show. So those of you who don't hang out, I don't think anybody doesn't hang out for the Christian-specific segment of the show. I think everybody hangs, but this is probably the most anticipated part. So, I'm gonna go get a fresh cup of coffee. The rest of you get in here, fill those pews. It's time for this week's sermon by the Reverend Lampshade. That's right. Get in here, fill those pews. It's time for the Christian segment here in the Church of the Lampshade. Okay, I've got my fresh cup of coffee. Hopefully, it looks like everybody's set in, ready for this week's message. We're going to do our scripture reading first. For those of you that like to follow along, we're looking at Matthew chapter 5. We're going to do verses 27 through 30. And this is Jesus speaking. We're going to go ahead and get this out of the way, and then we'll get into kind of the point we want to make this week. And there's several, believe it or not. We've already given up on the idea that we're not going to run long on the show. Like that's anything new. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast unto hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Now, we don't do a lot of, we do scripture reading in these segments, but we don't sit here and try to like read a whole bunch. And the reason is always quite simple. Just we've done these few verses here, and there's a lot here. There's a lot here. Really, there's more here that we're going to have time to even cover, but we're going to try to get to it as best we can. There's several different things. There's several different things here. And I want to start with the first part. You've heard it said that it was said by them of old that thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now, I remember a time, and many of you may be there yourselves, where you read that, and it's like Jesus is saying that, you know, just looking at a gal, and you're guilty of the sin of adultery. You know, it's kind of what that comes off as, isn't it? You read this, and it's like Jesus is saying that, you know what, you may not even done it, but it don't matter. You looked at, he's holding such a strict and high standard on you that you done looked at your neighbor's wife and like, she trotting out there in them dang yoga pants again. And man, that looks fine. But now you're guilty. You're just as guilty of adultery as if you had already gone over there and hit that. You may be thinking that's what Jesus is saying, and you, in the back of your mind, this is confusing because you're like, but I use my self-control. I don't even flirt with, I don't even make it a point to even talk to that woman. Because she does look fine and she's a little extra friendly. And you're thinking, but yet you read this and it's like you're already guilty of the sin and you haven't done anything. And this could be a tripping point because at some point it can leave you open where Satan says, yeah, that's right. So you might, you're going to do the time. You might as well enjoy the crime, right? You done looked at it lustfully. So now you're guilty of it. It's like Jesus is holding you to this higher standard. If you just look at a woman lustfully, you're already guilty of adultery. But that's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying. This is a very insightful passage that the Lord is giving us. He's telling us where it starts, where sin comes from. I mean, we're not going to get any sin comes because in the Garden of Eden, you see, the devil came and he tempted Eve. That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about where sin comes from in your life. We're going to stick with the analogy that Jesus used. So you wake up one day and you've got this whole drama fest going. Your neighbor is over here. He's threatening to burn your house down and kick your ass because he found out you've been over there banging his wife. We're sticking with that. Jesus's analogy, not mine. Maybe not Jesus's phrasing and wording. That's mine. But we're going to stick with that. So you wake up one day and you're like, man, you got all this drama going on. Your neighbor's threatening to kick your ass, burn your house down, you know, because he found out that you've been slipping over there. And then you're trying to justify it with, well, yeah, but she's the one to come over here. I mean, you know, it takes two to tango. It isn't just me. Don't just be mad at me. And you got all this problem around you. But I mean, you didn't just like wake up one day and look over there and it's like, how'd this bitch get in my bed? Yeah, that didn't happen. And it's like this with all sin. You see, sin in your life starts with entertaining the thought. Entertaining the thought. And this is important because our entire society is driven towards entertaining the thought. I mean, you take a look at our society and say you're trying to live an upright life. And your society, you know, you're trying to take this passage to heart and you're trying not to like burn with lust all of the time, you know, trying to move beyond, not be at a level of murder. And you're trying, you know, to live in, but it's, you live in this society where you're constantly being bombarded with sexual imagery. Maybe it is. It's inescapable. You drive down the road and there's billboards with basically, you know, I mean, yeah, they got the clothes on barely. But you're bombarded with sexual imagery. So it is your society is telling you the opposite. I remember one time, and this was what I started saying, I don't even remember the name of it. But I was like 19. You know, I was not the Reverend Lampshade back then. I remember reading a book because we read books back then. And it was written by a woman, probably a Jew. And it was all about, this woman was a psychologist, and she was saying that you should... basically, the whole point of the book was it was degenerate as hell. I'm embarrassed to tell this story, but I'm going to share it with you because it makes the point. And the whole degenerate book was about your sexual fantasies, and it's particularly for women and these sexual fantasies. And that's okay. It doesn't matter how degenerate your sexual fantasies are, because that's healthy. You should enjoy yourself. You should, because it's just fantasy. It's just fantasy. But see, that's not what Christ is saying here. Christ is warning you. It starts from somewhere. It starts from somewhere. Some guy gets arrested. He done grabbed some little kid off the street and sexually molested him. He didn't just do that one day. It started somewhere. It started where he entertained the thought. When you start entertaining thought, and you tell yourself, well, I'm just thinking about it. I mean, I'm not going to actually do that. You see, the world, and understanding that we're in a spiritual battle, the world is always going to try to give you some form. They'll dress it up, they'll camouflage it, they'll disguise it, but they try to give you a message that is counter to what Christ is telling you. Christ says it starts with the thought. He's not saying just because you thought about it, you're guilty. You know, it's going in your book record here that you're guilty of adultery just because you looked at that woman lustfully. If that was the case, everybody would have a huge thick book, because we live in a society of constant sexual imagery in advertising and TV, in the way people dress. You know, I mean, 50, 75, 100 years ago, women would not even go out in public dressed the way you see it all the time now. And it's a form of sexual imagery. You're bombarded with, you're constantly giving, in this instance, a message of lusting. See, the world will give you a counter message. Christ says, look, it starts with the thought. Guard your thoughts. We're talking about women, and it's like, guard your thoughts. Not that kind of thoughts. No, guard the thoughts in your mind. When you start entertaining a thought, that's the seed. That's where it... I'm not saying that you're inevitably, if you've already thought of this, it's going to wind up with you there doing it. It doesn't necessarily... Not every seed planted comes to fruition. But if you don't plant the seed to begin with, then it can't ever come to fruition. If, say, for instance, if you've never taken a drink in your life, you would never know that you were prone to being an alcoholic, would you? Because you never took the first drink. You never took it. If you could look back on your life later, you know, and they did like a, you were like 70 years old, you know, and they did like a, they came to the spot where they could do like DNA scanning, and they like scanned your DNA and said, wow, according to your DNA, you're a raging alcoholic. And this guy's like, well, I've never had a drink in my life. Well, yeah, because you never took it. If you would have took that first drink, you might have been hooked for life, you know, and struggled with alcoholism your whole life, but you never took the first drink. It's that way with your thoughts. Once you start entertaining the thoughts, the idea, and it's a fantasy. You see, it's a fantasy, but it's just a fantasy. It's okay. See, that's what the world says. The world says the opposite of what Jesus said. Jesus says, once you start entertaining the thought, that's where it starts. That's where it leads to adultery in this instance. You got to just wake up one day and do it out of the blue. It starts with you entertaining the thought. That's what Jesus is saying. He's not saying he's holding you to the same level of account as if you actually committed the deed. That wouldn't make any sense, and that wouldn't be justice. And then, as we know, the Lord, one of the things that defines the Lord is he's about justice. That wouldn't be just. You know, yeah, I mean, I looked at it, but I didn't do it. He's not saying that, but he's saying it's a warning. It's a warning to guard your mind. Where your mind goes, your body inevitably, you know, will oftentimes wind up following there. If you don't guard and become aware of that, it's how you get started down the road. It's a warning. Now, as I said, there's several different things we want to get to with this. And before I get to the second part, which we'll get back to, you know, what we read, we'll kind of go back over it. I would just like to say another message that the world gives to us, you know, is you don't want to ever, who are you? You know, who are you as a person? And you shouldn't let your sin define who you are. You know, look, we all sin. You know, we're all fallen. We all fall short of the glory of God. And you know, if you hold yourself to a high standard, it really bothers you. That you sin, and you look at other people and you think they're better than you. You think, man, I what's my problem? And truth is, they sin too. They got problems. They ain't going to sit there and tell you, going to go tell them what you struggle with. No. Well, they're not going to do the same. So don't get this idea that everybody else is better than who you are. But you don't want to start defining yourself by your sin. I don't care how staunch of a believer that you are, you're going to sin. And say you live your life, you know, you're awake, say you're awake 16 hours a day, you're up and about. And out of those 16 hours a day that you're awake, you sin 1 hour. If you collectively put all the sin together, you sin for 1 hour out of those 24 hours. Well, does that mean this 24 hours, you sin 1 hour out of the 16 hours that you're awake? I assume you're not sinning in your sleep. I don't think that's possible. You sin 1 hour out of the 16 hours. Now, does that mean that the other 15 hours where you tried to live an upright life don't count? Is who you are defined by the 1 hour of sin that you committed in a day? And it's probably not even 1 hour. But yet we get so fixated sometimes on our shortcomings. We get so fixated on the sins that we do commit. And we hold ourselves to a high standard. And you know, it can get frustrating. But you don't want to define yourself by the sins you commit. Who are you? I mean, what nature do you follow? The scripture tells us we're to follow the spiritual nature, but the scripture also tells us that we struggle. The spiritual nature and the sinful nature, or the fleshly nature as it's sometimes worded, are in constant conflict. So the fact that you have the conflict there is a normal thing. We're told that in the scripture. Well, which nature do you follow? Well, it's simple. How do you define yourself? Do you indulge in your sin? Is that how you define yourself, by your sin? Is that what makes you who you are? Or do you strive, do you reach for the spiritual nature? Which one do you pursue? Do you pursue truth, or do you just pursue nothing but your own lusts? Again, we're told that these two conflicting things are, you know, these two things are going to be in constant conflict in your life. We're told this. We Christians are the worst, that we think that somehow that conflict is magically supposed to be erased. But we're never promised that. The sinful nature and the spiritual nature will be in constant conflict. But which one are you siding with? The conflict is there. Who are you backing? Which side of this are you trying to follow? Which side of this are you trying to support and help to win in this struggle? the sinful nature, a spiritual nature. Likewise, once again, the world tells you the opposite of what the scripture does. Scripture says you should pursue the spiritual nature. But yet, the world says you should define yourself by the sinful nature. That's what makes you who you are. And nowhere is this more clear than the way the homosexuality is promoted in our society today. Well, who are you? Well, I'm gay. I mean, that's your, it's like people who aren't gay don't go around. Who are you? I screw women. You would be like taken aback, wouldn't you? If you walked up to some random person, some random guy and said, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so. Who are you? I screw women. Or I'm Jim and I screw women. You would be like, yo, okay, congratulations, I guess. That's who you are. That's it. You just screw women. That's all you do. But yet you have people that, because of the societal messaging, that is who, how they define themselves. Who are you? I'm gay. Well, you, okay, I didn't ask you what kind of sex you have. I'm gay. That's how they define themselves. And that's what society says. Who is this person? Well, they're gay. They're homosexual. They're pan. I don't even know what, there's so many now. I don't even know all of them. But the whole point, that's why they create all these categories, because you were supposed to define yourself by this. You are supposed to define yourself by your sin. You don't want to fall into that trap. And the thing is, once you start defining yourself by your sinful nature, it's that much harder to break loose of it. It's that much harder because now that is how you view yourself as a person, of who you are. You've taken the sinful nature and that has become a part of your identity. And whether you meant to or not, that's the side you're now backing. That's the side that you're supporting in the struggle between the spiritual nature and the sinful nature. This conflict that everybody's present in everybody's life. You're backing team sinful nature. So, again, it's one of the things about this society. They hang these labels on people because they want them to define who they are by their sinful natures. Hey, you would assume people have something else. I mean, you have something else that makes you who you are besides what kind of sex you have. This one thing. And yet you look at all these people and this is what they have adopted as their identity. The first thing they're going to tell you is that's who they are, because that's how they identify themselves. And once they're trapped into that, it's very hard to get out. It's not impossible, but it's that much harder for them ever to escape. This all comes back to, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, this is a, when you get down to it, this is a spiritual battle. Everything in this world is a spiritual struggle to survive. And the world is not on your side. Now, to get to the final point, that in our scripture reading, again, we'll go back and reread this part. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Is God telling you to self-mutilate? You know, if you steal something with your right hand, should you like self-discipline yourself, like Arab justice? You know, cut your hand off because there, now I won't steal again. I don't want any part of me. Maybe I looked at a woman lustfully. I should gouge my eye out. Then I can't do that anymore. Well, no, come on. That's silly. To read a literal sense into that, that is silly. So what's he talking about? The members of your body. Where else are we told about members of a body? The illustration of different members of a body forming a whole. It is the church, isn't it? If you want to understand why Christ is giving the people this warning, look at the state of the modern cuck church today. Look at it. Just as we said, sin starts with the thought. And this is, I think, why Christ put this all together in a neat package. And again, there's so many dimensions to just these few verses. It starts with the thought. But you look at the modern church, it didn't just wind up being what it is today. You didn't just wake up today and lesbian minister women, minister lesbians are performing homosexual wedding ceremonies there at the pulpit with a rainbow flag flying, talking about welcome the refugees. The church didn't wake up one day and it was just there. It started somewhere. It started somewhere, and it started because they didn't heed this warning. It started somewhere with the first person that piped up and said, well, what we need to do to become more welcoming, is start ignoring this part of the scripture and giving people a different message. And they didn't cast the member out. They didn't. You see, this is a warning. This second part is a warning that this notion that sin starts with a thought, it starts in your mind, also applies to the church. And if you're not on your guard, you'll have these people work their way in. We talk about it, whether it's in a company or the church or whatever. You have these SJWs, if you would. You have these people with a different agenda, and they work their way in. And they corrupt. We talk about these people don't ever build platforms, or they don't build organizations of their own. They go into yours and shit all over it, you know, and they destroy it. And then they move to somebody else's organization or church and they destroy it. And then they move to somebody else's organization or church and they destroy it. They never just make one of their own because nobody would show up. All they know how to do is destroy. Who else is like that? Oh, yeah, that's right. Their father, the devil. So you have these people and they work their way into your church and then they start trying to tell you, well, you know, we shouldn't be talking about this. Some of this messaging isn't very welcoming. We need to be more welcoming. We need to, you know, modify this a little bit. We need to start having some women in authority in the church. Yeah, I mean, the scripture says not to do that, but that was written back then. It was a different time. We need to be with the times. We need to get modern. We need to get more modern, and then more people will come, you see. And you wind up eventually at the state of the modern cut church. Christ isn't telling you to cut your hand out and gouge your eyes out. That warning is for the church body. When a member of the church begins to cause the church to sin, when a member of the church starts trying to drag the church down here to start worshiping down the road that leads to, in the end, worshiping the world, following and preaching the lies of the world instead of the truth. When they start trying to lead the church astray, it's time to cut them off. It's time to cut them off. It's time to cut them out. Gouge that eye out. Cut that hand off. It's time to expel them. Because they're trying to, it's better to enter the kingdom of heaven as a whole than to be cast into the fires of hell with all of your members. And this falls on the leadership. Because the thing is, look, you've got to have sinners come to your church. This is the whole point. It'd be like, we're going to have a doctor's office and we're not going to have sick people come here. That way we'll have a 100% success rate. Of course, you're going to have sinners come to your church. Everybody in the church is a sinner. And of course, you're going to have people that are different places in their lives come to your church. They've got to get there, you know, to start the journey. But it falls on, this is why it's work in the church leadership. It's one thing to let them in to your church to hear the message, but it's another when you start letting them lead you. You see, you're supposed to be the leader. Sounds almost authoritarian, isn't it? What do you know? Authoritarianism is a part of the natural order. You are supposed to be in charge of the church. You're supposed to lead them. They're not supposed to lead you around. There's no problem with having sinners coming to your church. I don't care what kind of sins they're struggling with. It doesn't matter. They come and they hear the truth and they start hearing. Let them come. My gosh, you know, otherwise nobody's going to get the message. Bring them on in. Come on in. But you are supposed to be the leader. You are supposed to be in charge. The elders, the pastor, supposed to be in charge. You're supposed to be leading them. The problem comes when you bring the sinners in and they start telling you what to do. And it's your failure when you do it. You know, I mean, you got to bring them in. But the problem is when they start telling you what to do and you're like, yeah, no, get the hell out of here. We're not doing that. But you got to do it. Get out, cast them out. You see, you're supposed to be, you got to be on your guard, because as a church membership, I'm using the IRL church as an example here. We're going to, you know, stick with that. As church leadership, you're going to constantly deal with this, because you got to bring sinful people in. That's the whole point of your message. You just can't be preaching to the choir week in and week out. Of course, you're going to have people, hey, well, you know, some people got invited. They came into the church to hear the message, see what this is about. People come on their own. Something brought them here. I don't care what kind of sin they're invested in. If you have somebody on their own, of their own, just decide, you know what, I'm going to come up and show up to your church. I don't care if it's a male homosexual prostitute hooked on heroin. If something made them wake up and say, I want to come to your church. I don't know why. I'm going to come to this church and hear what they got to say. You got to have that person there, because something brought them there. Something inside of them made them show up to come hear it. That's not a problem. That's the whole point. That's why you're here as a church. But the problem comes, where's the failure? I guess I should say, where's the failure if that person shows up 2, 3, 4 times and you visit with them a little bit? And next thing you know, they're telling you, well, you know, you need to quit, you know, saying that being a heroin addicted homosexual male prostitute is bad. In fact, you know, because if you quit doing that, I know a whole lot of guys, and we could have like a gay camping trip, and like I could bring in more into the offering plate, you know, because some of these guys are pulling in big bucks. They're doing it with celebrities and stuff like that. You need to say, you know, that's LAOK. Whose failure is it if you say, yeah, okay, more money in the offering plate? Sure, why not? Not their failure, it's yours. You're the one, as church leadership, it's your job to hold the line. It's not saying don't ever let them in. You got to let them in. It's your job, and it's a difficult job. It'd be easy to sit there and say, well, I just won't let anybody in. There, how about that? Then you're like the guy burying the investment. Didn't try to do anything with it. That's not the point either. It's a hard job. God didn't make it easy. It's a hard job. You got to bring in these people, and inevitably out of those, a bunch of them, maybe most of them, are at some point going to try to corrupt the church. And then you got to kick their asses back out and wash, rinse, and repeat. Guess what? It isn't an easy job. So why not? Everybody gets to do it. But you got to do it. It's your job to be on guard. When they start trying to lead you, when they start trying to lead the body, the church body, to hell, and that's what it ultimately is. They sugarcoat the words, but it ultimately is a message of follow the world. That's what it comes down to. Quit preaching this controversial stuff. Quit preaching this truth and start going along with the world's narrative. Then everybody will agree with you. Won't have all this conflict. That's the easy route. See? You'll get more money in the offering plate. Never materializes, by the way, because the congregation winds up falling off. And the church is destroyed anyway. You don't want your church destroyed. You better start guarding the gates. You better start guarding who's in charge. Who's leading who. Modern cut churches wound up today because nobody was on guard. Somebody along that was in authority just decided to go along with it. They had a national church council, and they have the democracy. They don't have anybody in authority. They have a democracy. And everybody voted, and they let all the women vote, and they let whoever randos come in and vote and get on the church committees and vote. And as a whole, the United whatever congregation church of the USA and the world has voted that we're going to have women, lesbian ministers performing rainbow flag homosexual weddings on the pulpit, talking about bringing in more refugees. voila, you have arrived. It all started at the beginning. Nobody was in charge. Nobody guarded the body. Nobody set down the barriers. Everybody just went along to get along. And now you wind up where you are. They just wanted to get more seats, more people filling the pews, more money in the offering plate. And they fell for it. They didn't cast any members off. They just let everybody come in, let everybody tell them where they should go. Then they have the democracy, and then they all voted to be with the world. That is not the way it's supposed to work. And we're warned of it right here. Christianity is in and of itself authoritarian, and we know that if it is of God, it falls in with the natural order. So this, the natural order of things is for somebody to be in charge, and then you have others in charge under them. The democracy is counter to nature. And yet all of these churches, these huge churches, these national worldwide churches, they have a big get together. And what do they have? They have a vote. They have the democracy. Nobody's in charge. It's against the natural order, and ultimately, it's against God. We hit several points here. We're way long. Got to wrap up on that note, folks. But we hit several points here. Not letting sin define who you are. Remembering that if you don't want to struggle worse with sin later down the road, if you don't want to have more problems with sin down the road, try to catch it when it first pops into your mind. It's easier to defeat then. You wind up down the road of really struggling with something harder down the road. If you guard your thoughts, if you keep your guard up about what you allow, what kind of thoughts you entertain in your mind, then it's going to be easier for you than if you wait until now you're knee deep in drowning with sins. And finally, guarding the church body itself and looking at the modern cuck church and understanding that all of these things come together to really relate to how the modern cuck church has got into the failed state that it is in today. They didn't cast the members off. They didn't cut the right hand off. They didn't gouge their eye out. They said, well, that member's too important. He's got too much influence, and he donates too much to the church. We can't cut him off. We've got to go along with what he's saying we should do, even though it's counter to the truth, counter to what is right. It's calling for going along with the world. Is failure and authority. And again, just like sin for you personally starts somewhere, it's this modern cut church state started somewhere. And I think this gives us a better idea of how it wound up from A to B, because it's important to understand. It's important to understand, because non-believers will sit there and say, well, Christianity, look at this, is just the modern cut church is what Christianity is and has always been. It's not, but it does exist. So it is important to understand how it got there, so you can guard yourself personally and, you know, the church body as well. We got to wrap up on that note. Final thank you to those who financially support the show. Any little bit helps. So if you haven't done that, you're highly encouraged to do that. No amount is too great. No amount is too small. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Wrap up on that note. We'll be back next week. You know where to find us, right here on Radio Albion for the Church of the Lampshade.